The Blaze Radio Network. On demand.
Glenn Beck. The Blaze Radio Network.
Yesterday on the program, we had Michael Malice. He is an amazing guy. He actually was born in the Soviet Union. His parents defected in the 70s, and he got out. And so he has been struggling with things. He's also Jewish, struggling with things like modern day concentration camps and the evils of communism and totalitarianism. Yesterday, we talked to him about Korea on a high level. He went over to North Korea and really got to know some of the people and the culture. And it's a terrifying place. I wanted to invite him back today because I wanted to talk to him about, you know, life in this former Soviet Union, because I don't think people even understand how free we are today. But I also wanted to talk to him about something that, you know, if the media really cares about the people of North Korea and the people of South Korea, then they would be doing things like what I'm going to ask him to do. Tell us about the concentration camps that are happening currently in North Korea. Michael, welcome to the program.
Thanks so much, Glenn. Man, this is going to be a dark day on the Glenn Beck Show, because, I mean, starting with that sad opener, and I'm about to make it even darker. So when
Second. I want you to know that wasn't a sad opener. I think that was a mirror. They're miracles. People provide miracles.
Very touching and intense. In the North Korean concentration camps, as we discussed yesterday, they send your whole family, three generations. The leader of North Korea, the founder, Kim Il-sung, said class enemies must be exterminated to three generations. So when you get sent to the camps, you still have to work. And what is, you have a quota. And what's insane, even by concentration camp standards, if you kill yourself, your family still has to fill your quota. So even death is not an escape in these camps from the reach of the Kim dynasty. There are children there, you know, men and women, and you hear these stories of, for example, it is illegal to have relations with the camp guards. So very often these women are assaulted by the guards who have complete power over them, but then the women are the ones who are punished. There was this one story where a woman was assaulted. They ran her over with a truck, cut off her legs, and she still had to report to work, pushing herself on a tire. They're not going to give her a wheelchair. You have stories where even in the camps, they can punish you. So you have men sentenced to work in mines, and they never see sunlight again. So their skin starts to slough off from vitamin D deficiency. So this is a level of barbarism that has almost never been seen on Earth. And so much of the press is focused on how fat Kim Jong-un is, and his rhetoric, and I was so pleased to hear you talk about this yesterday, and this is why I wrote your reader, so that people can realize the focus is on 25 million slaves in this country. And so much of the rhetoric in the press is like, well, it's better that they die than we die. And it's like, well, how about we figure out a way where no one dies? That's my goal.
You know, Michael, I don't know how to solve this. And I think some people tune this out, you know, the press, because they don't think anybody wants to watch it or pay attention to it, which I think is just total laziness. It's your job right to figure out a way to present it in such a way that you can feed it to people.
Yeah.
That's your job.
Go
ahead. Go ahead.
Well, that's why I wrote my book. Because
right,
it was driving me nuts that you see people completely uninformed on television making these claims, you know, making it like another Iraq or another Nazi Germany, and it's not. And I said, I'm going to do something about this once and for all, and I'm going to write a book so people can understand how it got to this place. It didn't happen overnight, Glenn, as you know. This is a long, methodical process to take a population and reduce them to this state.
Michael Malice is the name of the author, and the book is Dear Reader, The Unauthorized Autobiography of Kim Jong-il. It's in some ways, in a different way, so hear me out on this question. When we went in and we freed the concentration camps of the Germans, some at the very beginning, our help actually killed them by feeding. It killed them. I mean, it's just it was a horrible situation. And so we had to be really, really careful on how to bring people back to health. How do you, for people who have been in a concentration camp for three generations, how do you bring those people back to any kind of understanding of how people should even be treated?
Well, what's even more insane is that when North Koreans send people to the camps, sometimes those people are freed and they return to North Korean society. They have to basically sign a non-disclosure agreement and they have to try to pick up the pieces of their lives. So there have been instances of this where people have been returned, but they're obviously broken human beings. And there's different types of camps. There's political camps and there's work camps, because one of the things these totalitarian nations have the idea, you remember the slogan over Auschwitz was "work makes you free." They claim and they believe in North Korea that by working, you will learn to love the leader and you will work your way to kind of enlightenment and understanding the Juche idea, which is the philosophy that guides North Korea. So it's so depraved in so many ways. But thankfully, you know, there are stories of people who had the book that really moved George W. Bush is called The Aquariums of Pyongyang. And this is the book that really blew the lid off of the camp system, because the people, the family went to live in the camps and they were freed. And then one of the guys became a refugee and he told the stories of what's going on there. And more people are escaping North Korea and telling the stories of what life is like in these camps. So but here's the scary part. The people in the camps are told, should the Americans invade, we are going to kill you all and burn these camps down. And that's something that no one takes into account when they're advocating starting war with North Korea.
How many people are estimated to be in these camps?
100,000 to 200,000, and you can see them for yourself on Google Earth.
What do I Google?
I mean, just go to Google Maps. I forgot, you know, just Google North Korea concentration camps. You'll find it pretty quickly. Maybe not using Google, maybe another search engine these days.
And there's no doubt that the North Koreans would slaughter them. I mean, that's what the Germans tried to do. They just didn't have enough time. You have to erase these crimes against humanity.
Of course. That's the other point you made yesterday. Everyone talks about they're crazy. They're not crazy. They're evil. They're smart and they're conniving. And exactly like you said, they want to wash their hands out of these crimes against humanity. And that means murdering at a huge scale. During the 90s, they refused to allow food into the country, and up to 10% of the population starved, 1 to 2 million people, because Kim Jong-il, the father, said, if we let the UN give them food, they're going to not need the government. And the people who are the most loyal to the regime were the first to starve, because they were the ones thinking food's right around the corner. I believe in the leader. It's the shady ones and the cynical ones who were like, I'm going to lie, cheat, and steal to feed my family, who survived.
Michael Malice is on with us. MichaelMalice.com. Also, the book is Dear Reader, The Unauthorized Biography of Kim Jong-il. We'll talk a little bit more about North Korea and what to do there, but also want to hear his story, Life Behind the Iron Curtain. His parents came to the West to escape the Soviet Union. How about we actually have a real adult conversation about what we're doing?
And we've been very adult so far, and yeah, it's understandable with the context of the times. Though, Michael, your book is really entertaining. I don't want that to be lost in like a really serious topic here, because you made the choice to write it as Kim Jong-il.
It's in the first person, and I want it to be the kind of book you can read in the beach and or bathroom, right? Because unless you make things fun and entertaining and kind of a page turner, it's so dark and so depressing, people shut down. So I thought, let's make this something that people can enjoy. And one of the reviews I got, it just really hit me, was, this is the funniest and most terrifying book I've ever read.
That's great.
Because
it's great. Mission accomplished.
I'm sure a lot of your audience have seen the movie The Incredibles, and they talk in that movie about how supervillains gloat and they go on their monologues. So when you read their literature, you know, they boast about all the things that they do. And there is a sick kind of humor to it that with a straight face, they're saying things that you, when you stop and think about it, you're like, this is madness.
Like what?
Well, for example, Kim Jong-il hates the Mona Lisa, I learned from reading their propaganda. And I asked my mother, who grew up in the Soviet Union, I'd say, why do you think Kim Jong-il hates the Mona Lisa? And she, it took her 1 second. She goes, because she has an ambiguous smile. And that's right. According to North Korea, if art is ambiguous, it's not art. Art has to have a propaganda message that's very clear to the masses, or else you can't consider it art. And imagine living in a country where every piece of art has to have some political message, and that political message is always the same.
I think I do live in that country. I hate to point that out, but I think we're there. do the people there actually believe the stuff, like, you know, he came down and was born and was delivered by a flock of birds, and he remembers the day he was born?
That's the first line of the book. I remember the right. day. What is it? I remember the first day of the day I was born perfectly.
I remember the day that I was born perfectly.
And that is not a funny statement where you're grandiose and overstating what Kim Jong-il said. He actually told people that, and they were really forced to believe it.
I've heard that he doesn't go to the bathroom. People believe that he has no bathroom needs.
No, see, a lot of times the West gets it wrong, and let me explain how they view him. Right. What that bathroom line is, what they meant is he works so hard he doesn't even take breaks to go to the bathroom. So that's not really a big expression. Okay. However,
does he wear adult diapers?
I don't think we need to go there. Go ahead.
Yeah, but they look at him not like a person. They look at him kind of the way we look at Uncle Sam, right? Now, Uncle Sam, we know what he's like, what he does. If I ask you, well, if it's Uncle Sam, who are his nieces and nephews, you never stop to think about that, right? It doesn't make sense, but he's an uncle. So you don't perceive him as a full human being. However, there's another story which was amazing to me at how they view Kim Jong-il. There's a building, there's an obelisk in North Korea called the Tower of the Juche Idea. It's got this flame at the very top.
Hang on. We'll get the rest of this story, and maybe they should learn Uncle Sam wears stripes, meaning he should be in prison. Maybe they should learn that about their uncle as well. We'll get the rest of the story and then move to the former Soviet Union. What was life like for
this is the Glenn
Michael's
Beck
family?
Program. Mercury.